Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you download us from. Thank you for doing that. This session is brought to you by LifeFirstNaturals.com, the makers of Truebiotics, Bovine Coostrum, and Dye Rescue. You can go to their website, LifeFirstNaturals.com, to see the randomized double-blind controlled trials supporting the specific indications for them in most people over the age of 50 for women and 55 for men. And of course, LongevityPlaybook.com. Go there to sign up for the free newsletter. Today's guest is Dr. Brian Johnson. He's a professor emeritus at SUNY Upstate Medical University, a renowned expert in addiction psychiatry with a deeply personal and professional connection in the field. He grew up with parents who struggled with addiction. He first witnessed the devastating effects of substance abuse in his father, who succumbed to alcoholism, and in 2019, his brother's decomposing body was found after being overtaken by addiction. These life experiences have fueled Dr. Johnson's determination to understand and combat addiction more, although he was already a psychoanalyst who had treated addicted people for 50 years. He has over 50 publications in the field and is an often sought reference for regional and local media. Dr. Johnson, I take it that the life's events relating to your father got you interested in the field, but you obviously developed more in that. How did you happen to get into both anesthesia and psychiatry?
Well, the anesthesia relates to pain, and we've made discoveries about chronic pain, and addiction has always been a preponderance of my patients.
The book title is The Mass Psychology of Addiction. What do you mean by the mass psychology?
One way of dealing addiction, it's got to do with the people who have the illness. But the point of the book is that we've all got a denial system about addiction, including that we don't notice that it's the most common cause of death in the United States.
And when you say it's the most common cause of death, we know that there are roughly 70 to 90,000, if you will, drug overdose deaths. What else do you include in that addiction category to get you to the most common cause of death?
Our nation was founded by drug dealers, so tobacco was the first addictive drug in the 13 colonies. Between the two of them, presidents Washington and Jefferson had more than 500 slaves, and by 1670, half the men in England used tobacco every day. So people don't recognize that tobacco and alcohol were the original addictive drugs of the United States.
And there are others too. Obviously, sugar is an addiction often. When I think of the addiction to sugar as well as alcohol, the opioid drugs, and tobacco, they probably do represent the leading cause of overall death in the United States and clearly disability. So I thought when I picked up the book, and that when you look at the book, you'd say, well, the mass psychology of addiction is not only because there's so many people using it, but we use it in groups, and it is groups that often get us addicted. Is it not?
No, I don't think that's accurate. The book is told by patient stories, and the first patient who's considered has alcoholism, and she recognizes several months into her twice a week transference focused psychotherapy that her grandfather raped her starting at age 3, and many adults in her family knew about it, including her mother, who was washing her bloody underwear.
Let me come back to that in a second. So most people don't learn to smoke alone, do they? They learn from someone else.
Yes, that's true. And it brings up another point about addiction. The brain center is often mistakenly called the reward center, and there's nothing rewarding about smoking. It makes you nauseous, it burns your throat, and what I hear about learning to smoke is you do learn from older children, and it's a mark of distinction that you learn to tolerate the discomfort of inhaling burning tobacco leaves.
I've always thought that was probably true of most opioid addictions. In other words, most opioid addictions aren't from doctors overprescribing it. It is from people learning it in their community setting, in their environment. And at least in my experience, when people go back to the same environment, if there are others who are still using the drug, or family or friends or spouse, it's very hard to sustain a recovery. So when I picked up the book, I thought, this must be a book about the people hooking other people. And obviously that may not be exactly the case with child abuse and abusive relationships, but it seems to me it's the case of a lot of situations.
80% of people who use heroin started with doctor prescriptions, and drugs like oxycodone or morphine are expensive. So the generic name of heroin is diacetylmorphine, and people switch from prescription pills to heroin because drug dealers make huge amounts of it available relatively inexpensively.
It seems to me, although I understand what you said, 80% with heroin may be related to an original opioid prescription, we haven't seen, even with a great reduction in prescriptions now, we are seeing a small but not a huge reduction in opioid use and deaths. Am I right on that, or do I have the data wrong?
No, that's correct, but it's a small reduction. And it brings up another point, that a problem that originates as an outside problem becomes an inside problem, not only because opioids reduce the symptoms of trauma, but they capture the ventral tegmental dopaminergic seeking system, which could also be the craving center. And now you've got an inside problem. You crave opioids in a non-changeable way.
Is that the same genetics for tobacco. If someone is tobacco use problem, is that likely if they didn't use tobacco, could have a opioid usage problem or could have another drug usage problem or a sex abuse usage problem, et cetera? Are they all in the same basic center that, as you say, isn't really a reward center, but is an addiction center?
Yes, there are some differences in the genetics of, say, tobacco or opioid or alcohol addiction, but they do all run through the craving center. And tobacco is the original gateway drug. And people don't recognize that they started being addicted to tobacco and then went on to alcohol or opioids. But people will say that quitting cigarettes is harder than quitting heroin.
And let me go and ask you, where does marijuana and the liberalization, I guess, of marijuana being not only medical marijuana, but recreational marijuana is approved by the majority of states. Where does that fit in the addiction issue?
It's quite similar to alcohol. So many people use alcohol recreationally, but they use it in the evening. Same with marijuana. And with both drugs, it's the people who start first thing in the morning who are addicted.
So in Ohio, where we've done a number of studies, I'm the treasurer of the One Ohio Recovery Foundation, which is the foundation that gets 55% of the state's money. We get roughly $1 billion over 18 years for treatment and prevention. And one of the things we've learned is that 18% of the people who go to work in Ohio have smoked marijuana right before they go to work, and that 33% of the total working population in Ohio uses marijuana more than 3 times a week.
Okay, well, if you drink every day or use marijuana every day, it's not necessarily addictive. The definition of addiction is repeated harm from use. So if you drink, I had an aunt who drank exactly one beer at dinner every night, she was not addicted. People who smoke marijuana every night are not necessarily addicted. It has to do with harm.
So the definition you have in here in the book, and the book is The Mass Psychology of Addiction by Brian Johnson, MD, and it is a Kohler, Koehler books. Dr. Johnson, the definition is continued use despite consequences and harm. Is that correct?
Another way to say it is you urgently want the drug even though you know it's harming you.
If we, by liberalization or legalization of marijuana in all the states, made it so that most people don't know it can harm them?
Well, this brings up another point. The three choices for how to sell drugs is have criminals with guns sell them, have corporations like Big Tobacco sell them, or have the states sell them. People are going to use drugs no matter where they come from. So I propose that all drugs except alcohol be sold at state addictive drug centers or SAD centers, and that the state collect all the money that otherwise would go to either criminals or corporations that know that they're killing people.
We have been talking with Dr. Brian Johnson. He's a psychologist as well as an anesthesiologist who wrote the book, The Mass Psychology of Addiction. It's published by Kohler, K-O-E-H-L-E-R Books. We, as usual, are sponsored by Life First Naturals, makers of Truebiotics, Bovine Colostrum, and Dye Rescue, as well as LongevityPlaybook.com. Go to those two websites, LongevityPlaybook.com, to sign up for the free newsletter, and go to LifesFirstNaturals.com to learn more about Truebiotics, Dye Rescue, and Bovine Colostrum. Thank you, Dr. Johnson. And the book, again, The Mass Psychology of Addiction. Thank you, our audience. 50,000 of you who download us weekly can't all be wrong. Thank you very much. We'll be back next week. We hope you are too. This has been 1235B. The bees are always wonderful guests. Thanks a lot. We'll be back next week. We hope you are too.